Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
Bernie Sanders won the Nevada caucus last February, over a year ago. And as a result of that, Bernie Sanders has more county convention and state convention delegates in Nevada than any other faction. Over the weekend, the March 6th weekend, the Nevada State Party elected leadership. And apparently it didn't go well for the establishment. There are two articles that widely circulated on the internet with the following titles. Entire staff of Nevada Democratic Party quits after Democratic Socialist slate won every seat. And the other one is, say goodbye to the most effective Democratic Party in the country. I'm not sure it's fair to say they were the most effective Democratic Party in the country, given that in 2014, they lost all six constitutional offices to the Republicans. They only won one of four federal House seats, and both state legislatures, the House and the Senate, were turned over to the Republicans. So that's roughly 6-7 years ago. Then in 2018, all the Dems won it back. But you can't simultaneously be responsible for losing in 2014 because you're competent and winning in 2018 because you're also competent. One of those is not like the other. And this outcome is creating this consonant dissonance in the minds of shitlibs about, oh, we've lost this party that was really great, even though maybe it wasn't, but it is great and it makes us feel warm and fuzzy. But at the same time, this was a foregone conclusion over 12 months ago when Bernie won the caucus. He won by enough that this was going to happen. So how does Nevada actually coordinate and elect the local party structure?
This is going to be a great learning episode for most people who are unfamiliar with caucuses and how they work. Think of a party as a group of people who have to follow certain bylaws and rules, but they allow the public or anybody that's interested to become, I guess, local officers at that time to help with party planning and all of the official duties. But there are then these additional individuals who get to come together every 2 years and impact what the party does. And this is where the fun happens. And this is why it's awesome to always go out and caucus. So what happens at a caucus is there's a bunch of party business to be done. Most people think of a caucus as a way for the party to nominate somebody to the next level or whoever the candidate's going to be. But really, there's lots of other things that happen throughout the year, like amendments to the bylaws or things they support or changes to the organizational structure or other key pieces of legislature they're going to support. Other nominations for, you know, the officer for party inclusion and all these party politics, internal politics requirements. And the caucus member who come here are picked from the delegate pool, and they're called delegates. And you get to elect them at large during what?
Your precinct caucus. So every 2 years, most state parties have a precinct caucus. And what this means is every precinct, which is the smallest voting district, it's probably 2,000-ish people, depending on where you are. And it's where you go to vote, typically, is what your precinct is. So people from the community show up and participate in the Democratic Party caucus. And what happens at the caucus is you get into a room, everybody in your precinct conducts party business. And typically, like you said, it's to demonstrate what your presidential preference is. And it's to do party leadership elections and define what the party platform is. And most people think that it's mostly presidential preference. And to some extent it is, but it's also this leadership component in electing who represents you at each party unit. So each party unit is a different district. So you have your precinct, and then above your precinct is your county, and above your county is the state. Some states use congressional district, some states use counties, some states use cities. It depends on what state you're in. Nevada uses precinct, county, state, I believe. But for the purposes of this, it doesn't really matter. It's a tiering layer. Once you become a delegate at your precinct caucus, you would then attend your county convention, which is effectively a caucus, but at the county level. And then from the county, you can become a delegate and attend the state convention, which is, again, the same thing. Each one of these levels, you elect the people that are going to serve on the leadership board in each one of these districts.
Right here, this is the important part of the caucus. The caucus is A, for the party. And B, it's not necessarily a democratically elected party officials once you leave your local caucus. It's a representative election cycle. They elect local officers who then vote and roll upwards. The important part here is that whoever has the most people show up to a caucus can actually then control the state on the way upwards. So let's get into some of these mechanics real quick, just as a primer of at how this happens. So normally there's precinct delegates, and some states require that you be on a ballot, and some allow you to be elected at large during the caucus. You know, it doesn't matter, but essentially someone said, I want to run as a representative for this party at the local level. So you go to a room and someone says, sign a sheet of paper, sign in, okay, and then sign your name if you want to be a delegate to the state or county convention. So you say, I want to go to the county convention. Great. Now, if there's 20 people in a room and there's 20 slots available for your precinct, all 20 can go. If there's only 10, you have to decide now, who do you want to represent you? So you can have different delegates, you can have alternates, you can have all these factions that grow. But basically what happens is that you have organizational units within each little sub-caucus, we'll call them, who elect who they want to represent them. So if you're in a very big, let's say, Bernie district, everybody in that room may be a Bernie delegate because the Biden delegates can never win a seat, you know, to go to the next level. If you're in a mixed district, you may get 50-50 of 50% Biden supporters and 50% Bernie supporters. And if you're in a Biden district, obviously you might get almost all Biden or more Biden than you do get Bernie. Now, what happens is once everybody's elected here, the party business still has to take place. Now, a lot of times the caucus allows for presidential preference to happen first so that most people don't stick around to do the party business because it's boring and no one gives a shit about, you know, motions to whatever they are. Amend the bylaws to include the requirement that everybody uses their right hand only to vote. But things like that that are actually party business at the local level. So now what happens? Well, you did your presidential voting. You're now a delegate. You get invited to the caucus or the whatever the next level organizational caucus is. And you get to now vote on the next tier up. And this is where you get to now vote for, again, your nominees for things like state level representative or county level people. Right, you have a state representative who wants to get the nomination for the party. Right, you go and everybody from District 1 gets to vote for District 1. Everybody from District 2 gets to vote for District 2, etc. And you get your nominations, and that rolls up then to the federal level later on. Essentially, what's happening again is a tiered system, and whoever controls the most delegates going upwards gets to control the party and where the party goes. So, in the case of let's say a Bernie or candidate X, you know, being a powerhouse during a presidential election. If everybody that gets voted in at the delegate local level goes to the county level, they get to then decide who represents them at the state level. And so if majority of people that get voted in there go to the state level, guess what? They're in charge now of voting at the state level for party officials, which means that if you get enough people out at the local level, you can control the entire state.
And that's effectively what happened in Nevada. So to just put some numbers on this simple example, let's say the state of Nevada has 1,000 people, and each of those 1,000 people are broke into 10 counties, each with 100 people. And then each of those counties are broken down into 10 precincts with 10 people each. So you have 10, 10, 10 districts effectively. As 1,000 people show up and they express their preference, let's say it was 50% for one candidate, 25% for another candidate, and 25% for another candidate. So you would have 500 people for candidate A, you'd have 250 people for candidate B, and you'd have 250 people for candidate C. So at the precinct level, you're going to have effectively 100 precincts, and you would have 50 controlled by the candidate that had, you know, 50% of support. But then as it ripples up to the next level, maybe the people that have only 25% of the support are like, hey, my candidate lost, I'm not even going to show up. So you don't show up. Now all of a sudden the candidate with 50% might have 55% because some of the opposition dropped out. So that's the example of, oh, I only care about the presidential preference and I don't want to be a delegate and I'm not going to show up happening. And then at the next level, you have the 10 counties. So now you have five or half the counties controlled by one candidate. And you roll back up to the state level and you have, well, the entire state now has 50% control of this one candidate. So it's local representation bubbling up to bigger and bigger districts effectively. And that's what happened in Nevada. Bernie had more of the delegates at the precinct level, which means he has more of the delegates at the county level, which means he has more of the delegates at the state level. So when you have more of the delegates at the state level, you get to choose who the leadership is. And that's effectively what happened.
This actually means something really important. There's some takeaways here. One, if you want to control your precinct, and I shouldn't say control, but you want to have an impact locally, we always local first here. If you get all your friends in a room and you control the vote of your walking sub-caucus, if you control the room, you control the delegates to the county level or the next level up. You should know that. You and all your neighbors show up and you overrepresent because you organize people to show up. Guess what happens now? You control who gets voted to the next level. Which means if you did this for very populous counties, you actually may end up having a big impact on what you do. And this is the caucus game. So people who have historically showed up for the caucus will get phone calls from candidates asking to show up. Can you be standing in my corner, etc. Right? Because they know that's how this works. It also means that let's say you don't get chosen as a delegate because you have a minority candidate. Let's say it's a big Biden district and you want Bernie to win and you're the minority candidate. Sign up as an alternate. If you don't get the primary delegate, you sign up for an alternate because what happens is that life happens. People have to work. People would say, fuck it, I don't care anymore. I did my presidential preference. I'm busy. I want to go out of town. I'm sick. Something happens. If you're number one or number two alternate, there's a chance that you're going to get seated. There's actually a chance that in an off presidential year, nobody's going to go to the caucus. And if you bring in 40 friends, you're going to control the entire caucus. That's almost like given. But the other takeaway is that as you march forward, you have to really think about the time commitment that happens here. Because if you want to be a state representative, you have to, may have to drive 5 hours or however big your state is to the state. So sometimes the alternate delegate gets selected just because the primary will never even show up. Because again, if you have to travel and spend all day, when I say all day, I'm talking hours.
It's literally 16 hours and it is just frustrating as fuck. People just do, without having been part of the party, nobody knows how fucking incompetent it is.
Nobody knows how incompetent the fucking parties
it's
are.
It's so fucking incompetent.
And if you just learn Robert's Rules of Order, you can delay it another fucking 20 hours. Point of order continuously. I mean, you can just bring it down, grind it to a halt, especially if you don't get your ways. You can ask to amend the rules. You can change the rules. You can ask to seat a different chair. You can actually try to unseat the chair so that it's ran by a different person. There's all types of crazy shit you can do. So at the end of the day, in Nevada, just like everywhere else, the most organized candidate and the people that have the most eyes on the prize are going to be able to control the party. And in the past, the only people who gave a shit about the party were the party elites and those that have been brought up in the system for years and years and years, right? There's a reason why the same people go to the city council meetings every year or every day or every month, whatever it is. There's a reason why the same people show up for the party meetings and the same reason why people show up for the caucus over and over again, because it's part of who they are. It's their fabric. It's their egos. It's what they are. And what Bernie has done over running for president twice is he has championed progressive change, and we hate the word progressive, but more leftist ideas. And he's inspired a new generation of people to begin fucking around with electoral politics. It is a crazy game to play if you truly understand how electoral politics work. And this is one example of why having a nationally organized candidate feeding everything downwards can actually affect the local level if that's their actual goal. And in this case, in Nevada, it seemed to work.
It definitely worked. And the key takeaway here is that the people that care and commit the time are often the people that do the work. So when you think about, I'm going to spend, let's say, 3 hours attending my precinct caucus, I'm going to become a delegate, then I'm going to turn around and spend 16 hours at my county convention, then I'm going to be a delegate, then I'm going to spend another 16 hours, or maybe it's 2 days worth, so it's like two 16-hour days at your state convention. So it is a significant time commitment for some of this stuff. And historically, nobody has given a shit and done any of this. But in Nevada, there were enough Bernie supporters, and Bernie did well enough in the precinct caucus that he found enough people to give a shit. And over a year later, his delegates showed up and effectively purged the party.
So why would delegates from the Bernie, you know, days of Bernie want to purge the party? Is there any historical context as to why this is actually an important win?
Nevada has typically been run by Harry Reid. He was a senator who's been in politics for like literally 40 years. He's offered a certain point of view. I think most people on the left think he was a trash Senate majority leader because he didn't do stuff like remove the filibuster. And here we are like 10 years later, not removing the filibuster. We got a watered down health care bill. He's just kind of a milquetoast centrist. But he's generally controlled the party in Nevada. There's a lot of union power in the Las Vegas area. The Clark County is the biggest county. And so there's some internal politics there as to union support and stuff like that. And this last cycle, Bernie effectively went into Clark County and got the rank and file support of the union, but didn't get the leadership support. So you're seeing this kind of factional divide happening in the power bases of the Nevada Party. And Bernie's people effectively stuck with it, and now they control the party. So the power structures that used to exist were effectively overcome by another power base. And I think that is to some degree why people are concerned about this happening, because everybody wants to feel warm and fuzzy that the same people that were in power are still in power, and they don't actually really want anything to change.
And that's a good point. A lot of it has to do with what you assume the party at large wants. And most rank and file follow the leadership of the party. So if the leadership puts out a very conservative sounding party platform, the rank and file is going to pick it up because that's how it's going to be communicated. Whereas a more progressive or liberal-leaning platform may actually inspire individuals to change their mindset. Because again, rank and file, it's not that they're stupid, because that's not what they are. It's that they've grown accustomed to certain leadership styles and certain belief systems. And as long as you can meld your growth, you know, and change in party platforms within their constructs, it's not that hard to actually move them. I mean, think about every party platform that came out and said, we support gay marriage. Right, that actually happened first, and it's not really talked about, but the party platforms all over the country were slowly putting in place not just anti-discriminatory statements, but also pro-statements, just like with the environmental movements. There's a lot of things that go in party platforms that are hidden from the public because it's a party platform that no one wants to read because it's 80 pages of terse statements of insanity, but at least it helps to align some of the party officials. And in this case, winning out Nevada, some think it's a conservative state. It's not. There's a lot of money there. Nevada isn't really that conservative. Maybe out in the sticks or the sand, I guess. There's not really sticks out there. They are. But really, you're moving into the idea that you can now have more leftist-leaning people having their voice heard within the state of Nevada.
And historically, in all parties, the party platform is generally way further, we're going to say, left than anybody cares to acknowledge. But the policies presented in the platform are rarely exhibited by the leadership. So you can have a party platform that's literally like, we think that, you know, gay marriage should be allowable in 2008 or something. And that can be agreed upon by the vast majority of party members that showed up to the precinct caucus. But the outward position of the party is a political stance. And perhaps gay marriage isn't politically viable, so they're not really going to say that out loud. So I think in this situation, you actually have the party leadership perhaps representing what the party platform actually is. And that's not this sterile, third-way, focus group-tested politics. It's more of a direct statement of this is what we believe and this is what we're going to advocate for. Not, well, we're obligated by our bylaws to come up with a platform. And I mean, we did that, and our party believes this from its members, but we don't really think that's politically viable, so we're really not going to talk about it.
In general, party politics is boring. In general, people think it's corrupted. In general, it's not for the faint of heart to get involved, because it is, behind the scenes, sometimes very grueling and brutal. And that's because of the way that the caucuses and the parties are set up, and that's because the winner takes all. And only if the winner actually exerts their power. That's the other thing that happens here. It's only through constant communication, constant rallying, constant, you know, group awareness that when you say we have the power, we can take the power, we do what we want with it, can you actually take the power? So the example is, let's say that Bernie lost and Bernie disengaged. He said, fuck it, I retire, I don't care, I'm firing all my organizers, whatever it is. They wouldn't have taken Nevada. Now, there may have been a state person who was really championing this and grabbed this, but it's hard to keep momentum if the person you're championing on doesn't keep you engaged. It also speaks volumes to how well Nevada pulled together as a group and fought hard to basically maintain their power structure, because someone probably explained to them what's going to happen. If you can win the caucus, right, you win the state. If you win the state, you control everything. If you control everything, you can change how the party structure is. You can get rid of all types of insane-ass rules if you wanted to, right? But if you've ever been to a party meeting, it's like, it's some of the most...
It's the dumbest shit ever.
Oh, it's so bad. And it's because people show up, they don't actually understand that the party's doing business. And there's a difference between business and politicking. The party's job is to conduct business during its meetings, not to change the platforms and debate a bunch of, you know, nonsensical things. That's really done at the caucus, and there's committees that are supposed to do that, right? The platform is developed by the platform committee, and they present it to the local or the state, you know, board, and they're supposed to just approve it because it was done by the committee. So there's all these mechanisms in place that really hinder short-term changes because the party's business is longevity. It's designed to keep parties, keep the factions together, which is why this is such a great, great way of kicking Harry Reid in the teeth.
So the best part about this entire power shift is that the people that won exerted so much power that the existing leadership literally quit. Like, they preemptively quit because they knew they were going to get purged. Like, they exerted power without even having to exert it.
I mean, think about how many people that are in this leadership shit all over Bernie or shit all over their ideas when they brought them up, right? So that's what happens, right? People in power forever don't want to change.
I mean, this was Neera Tanden losing at the local level everywhere in Nevada.
Yeah, absolutely.
This shit's so funny.
This is absolutely great.
If you are interested in engaging in your local Democratic Party, and we're not necessarily advocating for it because, as we've said, it can be a complete and absolute waste of time. But there's kind of two things to consider. It's a great way to actually gain power locally. Whoever your local Democratic Party unit endorses probably has some form of an advantage. So if you're wanting to run for city council, you know somebody that wants to run for city council, having a seat in the Democratic Party locally is both fairly easy to do and can have a great benefit. And the second thing is to determine what you actually want to get out of potentially joining the party. If you just run as an individual, it's going to be a soul-crushing, frustrating experience. So you probably only want to do this if you have a group of people that are large enough to actually hold some form of power. If you're going to do it as an individual, your goal should generally be to prevent the group at large from doing something just phenomenally stupid. Because the existing power units tend to exist not because they're competent, but because a lot of old people have a lot of free time and they just want to feel good about themselves. And they do dumb, dumb shit continuously. So your role really just becomes trying to prevent them from doing dumb shit. If you have a group of people, you can actually attempt to wield power. You can change rules. You can basically just argue with people. At the end of the day, it comes down to how do you allocate your scarce resources. So at the precinct level or at the county level, there's not that much money involved in this. It's probably in the thousands of dollars, and it's like pulling teeth trying to get anybody to spend any of it. But if you have enough power, you can just do what you want. And with a couple thousand dollars, you can make a difference. The other thing about this whole power takeover was that the existing leadership transferred all of the money from the state Nevada party and gave it to the national DNC, which is an example of the libs playing hardball that you never typically see them do in anything that matters, like healthcare or the minimum wage. But so long as it's preserving their way of life, they're more than willing to do dumb shit like transfer $500,000 from the state party to the national party.
That effectively now cripples their party.
Yeah, so they're, instead of choosing the socialists, they're effectively handicapping the socialists and probably helping the literal fascist Republican Party.
They're going to help Republicans win because that's who they're more aligned to. The Harry Reid faction is a conservative faction who designed to keep, you know, big business in power.
Yeah, 100%. The Republican Party overtly helps businesses and the Democratic Party less overtly helps business. So now you have this third faction that actually has power in Nevada that is completely disinterested in helping business. You're going to see the Reid faction overtly help business interests. The consultants are going to go work for the Republican Party or some bullshit group like the Lincoln Project, but they'll call it like the Vegas Project or something stupid like that.
Something dumb, but really impactful because they're going to have billionaire money because, remember, Nevada is funded by billionaires. I mean, just let's not forget that there's not a lot of other key industries. So really, a lot of the influence is Las Vegas.
It's literally casino money.
What you're going to find is that, you know, we champion on this podcast and just in general life, local first, right? And there's lots of ways to get involved. There's ways that, you know, run for office. That's participating in electoralism, right? So run for city council, right? That's your local way. There's the volunteer work you can do. There's the party platform, more electoralism. There's a way to get involved everywhere. The main issue that any leftist will find or anybody that's looking for change is that they have to be committed to whatever they're going to go all in on. And they have to find the support structures around them to help them out. And it's not an easy task to find those support structures, which is why, you know, the left has an issue, which is organizing. Bernie's done a great job trying to bring in people to do that. The DSA's done a terrible job doing it, but at least they exist. So don't get discouraged when it comes to finding people around you, because eventually they'll find you. Eventually, if you are active enough, people that are like-minded will find you. And it's particularly hard right now during COVID because you can't just go out and talk to people. But really, it just means be active and get engaged as much as you can. And really try to find out what you want to do and try to find those around you that also believe your ideas and how to help you. If you need any help finding out, you know, what local organizations to belong to or what nonprofits to help with or what you think will be the biggest bang for your buck locally, you can email us at podcast@workingmovement.com and we'll get back with you and really try to help you through this, because the only way that we can really make change is to all fight collectively locally.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.